Before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to share a free resource just for you. It's called 5 Ways to Connect with God. In our busy world, it's easy to feel spiritually dry, but this short guide introduces 5 timeless practices like one-phrase prayers, cultivating thankfulness, and meditating slowly on scripture. They can refresh your soul and draw you closer to God. You can download your free copy today at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now, let's get into today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
Well, I am absolutely delighted today to be joined by Dr. Lillian Linden, who has a degree in philosophy of religion and wrote her master's thesis on Lewis's view of miracles. The title of her PhD was C.S. Lewis and Idealism. Lillian is the director of the Swedish part of IFES Finland and has imported the Veritas Forum concept to Finland. We'll be talking about Lillian's work on C.S. Lewis, as well as sharing a paper that she presented at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Lillian's paper there was "Did Lewis Credit Barfield for What He Learned from Steiner?" Lillian, you say in your paper that we're going to be hearing in another episode that according to Surprised by Joy, Lewis credited Barfield, Owen Barfield, for his transitioning from one philosophical worldview to another, from realism to idealism. Would you, before we look at who it was who helped him to transition, would you mind just defining some of those terms for us if we're not clear what that means? What is realism and what is idealism?
Yeah, this is an important question to be able to understand the paper. So according to realism, everything physical that we experience is real and it's not dependent on what we think about it. And this was what got me interested when Lewis was talking about miracles, because then he talked about how we experience it, not how it is in itself, which led me to idealism. So according to idealism, something outside of nature is more real than nature. And this something outside of nature can sometimes be impossible to reach for us humans. And that was like the concept of ideal reality in absolute idealism that Lewis was fascinated with in the early 1920s. And sometimes this something else outside of nature can be the only thing real, like in George Berkeley's philosophy, subjective idealism, that Lewis also was impressed by, but never embraced totally. So he never became an immaterialist like Berkeley. But he developed a philosophy of his own that he called pantheistic or solipsistic, and that he adhered to for a while, the end of the 1920s and beginning of 1930s, before he became a theist. But even when Lewis had this like pantheistic philosophy, he always regarded also everything we think is real as real. He just regarded the spiritual as more real, or how to say it. I hope something made sense.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful, really helpful. And how do we know what it is that Lewis believed about these things? Where are some of the key places that he wrote about his philosophical views?
Yes, so because my interest in Lewis is what he believed before he became a Christian. So just kind of recently, that is, in this century, some new material have been discovered, documents that have not been published before. And they are Early Prose Joy, which was an early philosophical biography by Lewis, and some lecture notes that he wrote about Berkeley, among others. And then the Summa, which was an essay of what he believed when he was a pantheist. And the Summa is counted as part of the Great War documents also. So these three are really important in my PhD, and I kind of give one chapter for them each in the PhD to try and see what Lewis believed during different phases of his pre-Christian life.
Lillian, would you say, if someone's not familiar with George Berkeley, would you just say a little bit about who he was and how Lewis would have come across him and what impact that would have had on his own thinking?
So he was, George Berkeley was a bishop in Ireland, Anglican bishop, I think. But he had this really fascinating view of everything we think exists, but only because God creates it all the time, or how to say it, like continuously. But he also had this kind of more strange view. He didn't want to be a skeptic, he said, that when we're not looking, is it then there or not? So he decided it is not there when we're not looking. So it's only if there are subjects around that also objects exist. So Lewis was very fascinated, mainly with this idea of spirit, that there is a spirit who has created everything, and that it happens continuously. This is something he borrowed, but also, well, he made a twist to this, that he thinks that God creates everything reciprocally. Or something like
this. Yeah, reciprocally. I can't say it either. Don't worry.
So me, like my soul, other souls, and nature as a medium for the souls to meet in, that everything is created at once and continually. So Lewis did not believe that God created once and for all back in history, and then it goes on by itself. He's not a deist. But he thinks God creates this moment, everything that we experience, which means also he can stop to create if he wants, and we would be just gone. But he continues, like he decides to continue to create us all the time, which is interesting.
Thank you. That's a really helpful clarification. Lillian, you've probably already touched on this when you were describing some of what Lewis thought, but how did his philosophical views develop over time?
Yeah, so this is such a large question.
Yeah.
And you should read my PhD to get a more detailed view, but I can just mention them again. So he was, he was a Christian when he was young. When he was a child, but for one reason, when his mother died of cancer, I think, when he was 10, so he was really disappointed with God, that God did not save her, even if he prayed and asked him to spare her. So he kind of became an atheist in his school years, and he stayed an atheist and a materialist or realist until he started studying in Oxford, and then became an absolute idealist, which just means that he thought that there was some kind of ideal reality outside of this reality, but that we cannot reach it. And as I say in my PhD, and I think this is how it went, that quite late, 1928 or so, he, thanks to Berkeley, but also discussions then with his friend Owen Barfield and Steiner, reading some Steiner, he decided that the spiritual world does exist. It's not just an ideal reality somewhere behind everything, that it does exist and it has created what we experience. So at that point, this kind of topsy-turvy move happened that he describes, that the spiritual or supernatural became more real than the natural. But he still somehow managed to stay an atheist. It's really interesting that this spirit behind everything was an it. It wasn't a person or a persona somehow. It was just a force. So it took some time. He really struggled against God as an other. He didn't want to have anything to do with God. He was so disappointed with him from his childhood. So he really kind of struggled against it until he then accepted God as a person later on. Yeah.
Still reluctantly as well, though. Yes. He does call himself one of the most reluctant converts, doesn't he?
Exactly. So, yeah. But many have talked about that. So, and you can read about that in other places.
Sure.
Yes.
Well, Lillian, two of the people you mentioned there, Owen Barfield and Rudolf Steiner, let's talk a little bit about them. Who was Owen Barfield and what impact did he have on Lewis?
Yeah. So they met at Oxford and they were students and they both loved poetry. And that's how they found each other. That was their mutual interest. But it's fun how Lewis also says that Barfield was like his second friend. If the first friend is someone who thinks like you, the second friend has the same interest, but thinks totally different about everything. So really gives a different perspective. But they still managed to be friends. And I think that's so Lewis had such a rich life, like he was able to take in into his life people with different perspectives. And stay their friends. So their friend. So I think this is really a good example also of how to live as a Christian. But he wasn't a Christian back then. It was just mutual interest.
But was Owen Barfield a Christian?
Owen Barfield came from an atheistic background. Actually, his family was very secular, and he didn't become a Christian till much later in life. So they both had that. They were kind of materialists, realists, and Lewis had become an absolute idealist quite early in 1922, when Barfield then became an anthroposophist, which was new to him and liked to take any spiritual stance at all. So, but he was really fed up with materialism, Barfield, that is, and was relieved or how to say it, when he found anthroposophy, because that was gave some kind of belief in the spiritual reality. But then Lewis was abhorred. He didn't like anthroposophy at all. Yeah, but still, because they stayed friends, it had impact on him as well.
Yeah. Would you define what anthroposophy, I can't even say it, anthroposophy is?
So yeah, so... it's a belief in a spiritual world that is accessible. It's kind of a Gnostic knowledge, like that if you're chosen, you can kind of access it, and you can learn. Like there are these methods that you can learn to access this spiritual reality. And for example, in the beginning of the Great War, this is how I have figured it out. Barfield became more interested in the occult side of the anthroposophy, and he tried to convince Lewis to try and meditate on a seed, which is one method of how to somehow empty what you think of and get new ideas, new knowledge. But Lewis, I think he even tried it, but he said, no, I don't believe it. It doesn't work.
You mentioned the Great War there. You're not talking about the First World War, are you? You're talking about this war between... Well, I'll tell you what, I'll read the extract from Surprised by Joy, which is where we get this Great War from. This is Lewis in Surprised by Joy, and he says, "For Barfield's conversion to anthroposophy marked the beginning of what I can only describe as the Great War between him and me." And then he goes on to say, "It was an almost incessant disputation, sometimes by letter and sometimes face to face, which lasted for years. And this Great War was one of the turning points of my life." So the anthroposophy was the key point, was it, there in that Great War?
Yes. So the Great War, it's seemingly about imagination. And if you can get new knowledge through imagination. But because he says it has to have something to do with anthroposophy, if you read closely the letters, you see it's about this kind of what they call poetic imagination, or Lewis called it poetic imagination. That means, take it from Latin, it means like creative imagination. So this occult imagination that Barfield wanted him to try out. So it was, well, at least about two things. If imagination can give new knowledge, and Barfield believed it could, Lewis did not. and if this occult imagination can give new knowledge. And Barfield believed it could, and Lewis did not. But it also had to do with if you can reach like the spiritual, is what Barfield would have said, or if you can reach the ideal reality that Lewis somehow believed in as an absolute idealist at this time, but he didn't think you can reach it. So it had these two themes, or how to say it.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
Have you ever wrestled with tough questions about faith? Or maybe you've had a friend who's skeptical about Christianity? That's exactly why we want to send you a powerful resource that I believe needs to be in the hands of every believer. Justin Brierley's book, Unbelievable, Why, After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. In this book, Justin reflects on 10 years of conversations with atheists, skeptics, and believers alike, and explains why he still finds Christianity the most compelling explanation for life, the universe, and everything in between. I know this book will strengthen your faith and equip you for meaningful conversations. And for a limited time, this book is our special thanks to you for your gift to Premier Insight. Your support ensures content like this and other shows and programs are available to bring faith-filled conversations to a world that needs them. So I encourage you to give today by going to premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis to receive your book today. Now on to today's show.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
Do we know why Barfield became an anthroposophist? Was there a particular moment or something he read that led him towards that?
Yes, he was one of their mutual friends. Cecil Harwood was the first one to become an anthroposophist, he borrowed books to Barfield and took him to conferences. So that's where he got the input. But it was also because he was back in 1922. He had been in love. He had a love affair that didn't work out. He was really depressed, and he was really fed up with this materialistic outlook on life at that time. So anthroposophy came as an alternative that he thought was better at that point.
Let's talk about Rudolf Steiner, because he's obviously a key player in this movement. I mean, who was Steiner, and how would Lewis have come into contact with some of Steiner's ideas?
Mm-hmm. So Steiner was from Vienna, and he had written about Goethe in the beginning. So, and that's where he got many of his ideas from, that you can somehow mix science and the spiritual worlds, and how you can get new information. So this is some of the ideas. And then Steiner was also a theosophist, like he belonged to another movement, but then he decided, no, he wants to create a movement of his own, and that was anthroposophy. And Steiner had these two phases in his writing. So first he wrote about thinking, and then he delved more into these occult practices in his second phase. But the books from the second phase have become more known. So that is usually what we know about anthroposophy. But it was one of the books from the first phase that Lewis probably read, because Barfield mentioned it in his own book, Poetic Diction, and Lewis was surprised that he agreed to something that Steiner had said. So I think that made him go and look up the book where he had said it, and then he found other things as well in that book that became important to him.
That's really helpful. Just going back to the Great War, was there a point at which that Great War ended between Owen Barfield and C.S. Lewis?
Well, Barfield tells this story about they often went on walks, on hikes, and he tells this story about being on one hike. No, this is much later. So that's when Barfield tried to reignite the Great War, and Lewis just wouldn't go there. So if you can say, no, I can't say that it just kind of...
fizzled out.
Yeah, yeah. They have these essays that are kind of half written in the end that no one of them kind of finished. So, and then Barfield tried to ignite it again, but Lewis didn't want to go there. So I think my theory is that Lewis just... he did not want to take time anymore to discuss with Barfield. He was a bit fed up with all this anthroposophy, and he thought he had more important things to do. Also, when he became a theist and a Christian, he wanted to focus on more important things. So yeah. he thought it was time to stop debating.
Steiner, one of the things that Steiner argues against is materialism. Would you just define what materialism is?
Okay, yes. So now I'm going to talk about Lewis. According to Lewis, he has two ism lists. Like, he lists what he believed in. And in one of the lists, he uses the term materialism. And in the other list, realism. So it seems that he uses them interchangeably. But materialism is like you believe that everything real is of material nature, and there is really nothing spiritual, or you can always, like, also in spiritual things you can find like atoms, or like you can always translate it somehow to matter, and matter is like the basic of it. Lewis was a materialist, like until very late in his philosophical development, he says, like he kept the universe as rock bottom reality, he said, for a very long time, until it swapped to God, like this topsy-turvy move happened. So it was really hard for him to accept that something spiritual could be more real than matter. And this had to do then with Steiner. Probably this is where he found his argument against materialism or naturalism, and that he writes about in the book Miracles. He gives it a whole chapter of its own, a third chapter. It's really close to what you can read in one of Steiner's books, Philosophy of Freedom, where he argues against many philosophies of that day, but materialism is one of them. So when I found that, I was really like, wow, could this be the place where Lewis got this argument? And then I started checking that. What did other people say, like, where did Lewis get the argument? And I couldn't find any other versions of it that would have been that similar. So this is one of my views now.
So is his book Miracles the main place where Lewis actively argues against materialism?
Yes, that's what comes to mind now, at least. Yeah, I'm sure you can find it in many other places as well, like I'm sure in Mere Christianity as well.
Lillian, I think it's really interesting that you think that perhaps Lewis, again, you talk about this more in your paper, Lewis has attributed this shift to Barfield, and you think it was Steiner and potentially reading this book that you just referred to. Mm. In some ways, does it matter who it was that helped Lewis shift his thinking?
In some ways it doesn't matter, because the argument is what it is. So it's just if you're interested in where did he get his philosophical influence from, so then it matters. It's just so interesting because he does credit Barfield for this shift, but no one has been able to show in any text where would this have come from, what would Barfield have done, and least of all Barfield himself. Like he didn't understand why Lewis thanked him for this. So... yeah, so this is one possibility then, that he thanked Barfield for what he got from Steiner, because he kind of indirectly got the argument from,
yeah,
or via Barfield, stumbled upon it.
Yeah. Barfield. is interesting as well, isn't it, in that it means that you can go back to the source, so we can read Steiner and find out the background for perhaps why Lewis shifted his opinion, and then we read a little bit more in depth of what Steiner thought, and therefore perhaps what it was that shifted Lewis's thinking.
Yeah, well, I would say the argument in Steiner is not very long or complicated. So Lewis has developed it, or how to say it, but still, I think the core comes from there. Made it possible for Lewis to leave the last ripples behind of his materialism that had been kind of combating with this view of Berkeley for a few years already. Can there be a spirit that has created everything, or which one is more real of these two? Then I would say that Steiner's argument was just like the last, how do you say, last
nail in the coffin.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was exactly, yeah, that opened the way for the way Berkeley was explaining things, and Lewis could then go on, and he didn't take anything else from Steiner, but he gave credit to Steiner in a letter for arguing against materialism. And then he could go on to develop his own view. Like, he went in another direction. So it was just this, he got this turnaround from him, and then he could go on in his own.
Lillian, your brain is obviously much bigger than mine, because you were saying that these arguments aren't particularly complicated. But for some people, perhaps for some non-philosophers, some of these arguments are a little bit complicated. But why do these ideas matter? And how can we make them accessible and relevant to a modern audience, particularly people who maybe, as I say, aren't well versed in philosophy, perhaps aren't aware of some of the background information that Lewis would have had at his fingertips? How do we make these ideas easy to understand for people that want to get into Lewis but are perhaps a bit unsure about some of these big philosophical ideas?
Yeah, so I think if we want to understand how different people think, and if we want to be able to engage with them in discussion, we need to understand how they think and what ideas they have. And Lewis said something along the lines that if we are not able ourselves to express in simple terms what we mean, it means that our own thinking is also foggy. And I think that's a really good way of putting it, because he was an expert in this, like making really complicated ideas accessible to anyone by explaining them and giving examples and so on. But I don't think this is for everyone. It's just like, if you're interested, then you should learn. And I'm not saying these ideas are not complicated, but they are possible to express also in more simple terms.
We need people like you and C.S. Lewis to help us understand them.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
Lillian, we're arguably in a even more skeptical materialist society than even Lewis was. So how do we perhaps apply some of these things that Lewis has said about miracles, about non-materialist realities? How do we do that in a way that is relevant for people today?
I think that's a question you should ask Alistair McGrath. He would have a brilliant answer to that. He's the apologist. I'm afraid I'm more, I just like understanding how Lewis thinks, understanding him. I think he can show the way how you should do it, but I'm not able to do it myself. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos, and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook at Premier Unbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there at premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.